it is nice to see you all here this morning. I know it's a cold, windy, blustery day, but we're glad that you made it out. We're a little thinner this morning than usual. The new year coming up, I think we've got quite a bit of us traveling this morning. Certainly glad that you all did make it here this morning. You are here. We've got quite a bit to get through this morning, so we're just going to jump right into class this morning. We have spent the last 3 weeks with our evangelism. We've been looking at our approach, how we are going to go out and evangelize. We have been taking our example from Jesus. We've been looking at these times that we find Jesus, trying to get into his mindset, is how it is that he interacts with certain individuals, the responses that he gives with regards to his approach and his evangelism and ministry. And we've been doing that through this setting of dinner with Jesus. We have been opening up scripture. We've been trying to find these stories where we find Jesus in the home. Jesus is having dinner with certain individuals or multiple individuals. But again, we're trying to see how it is that Jesus interacts with these individuals. We're trying to find out what it is that Jesus is doing that makes his evangelism so effective. Why is it he is able to touch the lives and the people that he comes into contact with? We have found Jesus in several different settings up to this point. We have found Jesus in the home of individuals that are seeking out Jesus. We looked at Zacchaeus and found the individual that was looking for him. And Jesus would spend the time in his home. We have found Jesus in the home of those that he has personally called out. We looked at the calling of Matthew, and this is the individual that Jesus specifically sought out to be a follower, to be a disciple. And we read of Jesus in his home having this dinner and this interaction that we found with Jesus and the ones that he called. We have seen Jesus interrupted, if you will, at dinner. We looked at Jesus at the home of Simon, the Pharisee, having this dinner, and this sinful woman seemingly interrupts this dinner that Jesus has. And again, we were able to pull out those scriptures and see how it is that Jesus interacted, how it is that he engaged with the situation and the individual and the response that was given. We have found Jesus in the home of those that needed some encouraging. We looked last week, these disciples that their hope was a little wavering. And we found Jesus having dinner with these disciples that needed to be taught. And so we find Jesus in all these different scenarios and these different settings of having dinner. I will say that I have enjoyed this class over the last few weeks. We agreed last week that we would do one more week of these dinners with Jesus. And I'll tell you why I've enjoyed this particular setting with this dinner. And you're going to have to stick with me for a minute because I'm a little odd from time to time. But as we have gone through this class over the last 3 weeks, I sit down each week and I study for the lesson and try to see what we can pull out of this scripture. And this image keeps popping in my mind. This picture keeps coming in. And I'm going to date myself a little bit. These shows were a little before my time, but they were still very common on television when I was a child. We would watch shows like Leave It to Beaver. We would watch shows like The Andy Griffith Show, Happy Days. We watched those television shows, and you're probably sitting here thinking, what do those have to do with dinner with Jesus? What does that have to do with dinner? And I want you to think, if you watched those shows, how frequently that show ended up revolving around the dinner table. How often did we find somewhere along the line, during whatever episode we were watching, the family around the dinner table? And more times than not, our lesson of the day, the problem was solved where? Around the dinner table. There's something comforting about sitting at dinner. There's something close and intimate with sitting at dinner with family and friends and loved ones. It's a safe place. We can sit down, we can open up with each other. We can talk about those things that have made us happy for the day, our joys of the day. We can sit down with one another in the safe comfort of that dinner, and we can talk about our struggles. We can get those words of advice. So as we've been doing this dinner with Jesus, I don't find it coincidental that we find Jesus in our scripture so many times sitting at dinner to teach. Again, there's something comforting around the dinner table. And that's why I have enjoyed this particular class. I've been looking forward to this each week. Again, we said we were going to do one more. This is going to be our last week on this dinner with Jesus. But we are going to look at one more. And very common to those shows, we're going to find Jesus this week around the dinner table with those that he knows best. Those that know Jesus. Those that love Jesus. We're going to be in John chapter 12 this morning. If you want to turn over to John chapter 12, that's going to be our passage this morning. But class is going to be a little bit different than where we've been the last 3 weeks. As we look at this story that we read in John chapter 12, I don't want us to focus on Jesus this week. That sounds bad, right? As we read this story, what I want us to look at and what I want us to focus on this week is we want to look at what is going on around Jesus this week. And hopefully as we get through class, you'll understand why I want us to look at the individuals that are here with Jesus and what's taking place around Jesus this week. So let's read John chapter 12. We're going to read the first 8 verses and then we will start breaking this down for class this morning. Starting in verse 1, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. We're here. Jesus is back in Bethany. The text says that we're 6 days before the Passover. Jesus has been here before. If you go back one chapter in John, you will read that Jesus was already here with Mary and Martha. He has raised Lazarus from the dead. And because of that, this plot to kill Jesus was put into place. Jesus and his disciples have left for a while. But here we are, just a few short days away from what Jesus has to do. And he's back in Bethany. This John's recording of this doesn't tell us where they're at. They're in a home. But if you go back to Mark 14, you can read Mark's account of this story. And you'll find out that he's at the home of a gentleman by the name of Simon. He's a leper. Mark's account doesn't tell us who's with him. It tells us where he's at. But John tells us who is with Jesus. Mary. Martha. Lazarus, and some, if not all, of his disciples, and Simon the leper. So here we are, we're at this home, and they are going to give a dinner in Jesus' honor. What does this have to do with evangelism? As we read this short 8 verses, it doesn't seem that Jesus is doing any evangelizing here. But as we read this, the first thing that pops to my mind, the thing that pops out the most, and this is where I want us to really focus this morning, is honoring Jesus with our homes. We have been talking about this dinner and how effective it is to sit in the home and have dinner and minister and evangelize. So it is fitting that we talk about honoring Jesus with our homes this morning. Apparently, it is a very effective tool to evangelism, to open up our homes. We are called to be a people of hospitality. And again, there's a lot of different ways that we can be hospitable people. But this particular story is revolving around the home. opening the home to honor Jesus. Let's go over to Isaiah chapter 58 this morning. Isaiah chapter 58. We'll look at a few verses this morning with this idea of being a people of hospitality, opening up our homes. Isaiah 58, we're going to read about this fasting, this true fasting. There's something that isn't being understood. And I don't understand the entire passage. I'm not going to lie to you. I'll be honest about that. But I do read verse 7. And verse 7 says, "Is it not to share your food with the hungry, and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood." I read this and I think that we're supposed to share our food with the hungry, to shelter the wanderer, those that are in need. How do we do that? We have a great example from this story that we're reading in John this morning. We open up our homes. We reach out and we evangelize through opening up our homes. First Peter. Peter, in his first epistle, is going to give us some insight about this idea of being a hospitable people, opening up our homes. Starting in verse 8 of 1 Peter chapter 4, we read, "Above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grudging." Can we honor Jesus by opening up our homes? Can we honor Jesus with our homes and what we can give and what we can display, the hospitality to one another? Jesus in Matthew chapter 25. Go to Matthew chapter 25. We read this parable from Jesus. On that day when he comes, Jesus is going to separate the goats and the sheep, right? And it starts in verse 35, and it's going to go down. I wrote 42 through 46 up there on the slide. This is the contrast to what he's saying. But starting in verse 35, he's going to talk about being hungry, giving him something to eat, thirsty, giving him something to drink, stranger, inviting him in. He's talking to those that did that and how Jesus loves that aspect. And then in 42 through 46, we find the complete opposite. Those that did not feed. Those that didn't invite him in. And they're confused. They're asked Jesus, "When did we do this to you, Jesus? We don't get this. We don't understand." Jesus says, "Did you do it at all? Did you do it for anyone? If you didn't do it for anyone, means you didn't do it for me. You did not honor me with your home. You did not honor me by feeding, clothing, inviting them in, reaching out." So we have this call. And again, this is what I want us to think about as we go through class this morning, this idea of using our homes is an evangelistic tool. How we can reach out to those in need. So what does it look like? How do we do this? Let's go back to John, our text this morning, John 12. We want to look again at what's going on around Jesus. Let's look at the people around Jesus and see if we can figure this out. We spent several weeks on loving God with all of our heart, soul, and our mind. What is it to love God? Love Jesus with our hearts, with our souls. It's our actions. It's what we do, right? It's the compassion that we have. How do we love with our heart? Do we love Jesus with all our heart? Because part of this loving Jesus with our heart and this idea of using our homes to honor Jesus. Let's first look at Martha. Doesn't say much about Martha in our text. We have two words with regards to Martha in our text this morning. They're in verse 2. What is it? Martha served. That's all we read. Martha served. But I think it's very powerful, those two words, because if you're like I am and these mental images pop into your head, what do you think about when you hear this? Martha served. They're having this dinner in honor of Jesus. What do we think of the one that's serving? She's probably pretty busy. She's cooking. She's probably cleaning as she goes. She's getting stuff prepared. She's going to come out. She's going to serve Jesus. She's going to serve those at the table. We look at Martha, the servant. We read of Martha the servant. When's the other time that we read about Martha the servant? It's in Luke chapter 10. What goes on in Luke chapter 10 with Martha the servant?
She's busy serving.
She's busy serving. We refer to Martha, right? She's the worried housekeeper. Martha's busy running around. She's serving. And when we read that passage from Luke 10, what's Mary doing?
Listening.
She's just sitting at the feet of Jesus. How does Martha feel about that?
Mary's not carrying her load. For sure.
Come on, Mary, you're slacking. Help me out here. Martha even goes to Jesus and says, Jesus, make her help me. Make her help. And what's Jesus' reply? What does he respond with? What's Mary receiving? She's doing something far more important. She's receiving something far more important than this work. So when we first see Martha the servant, it's not really a rebuke from Jesus, but Jesus is saying, there's more important things, Martha. And we get to this text this morning, and do we see Jesus saying anything about Martha serving? No. There's a book out right now. Some of you might have read it. I haven't read all of it. I've seen bits and pieces as I've looked at some different ideas, but we have this book about the love languages. Anybody read the love languages? This is Martha's love language. She is a servant. She has a serving heart. Martha is doing what Martha knows how to do. Martha loves Jesus with her heart. And the way that Martha shows this is through that serving attitude, through that serving heart that she has. We too should have serving hearts. Go back over to 1 Peter. Should have kept us there. 1 Peter, we read the first part of chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. But look at verse 10 of 1 Peter 4. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to what? Serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. Peter says, we have all been given a gift. We have all been given this way, and we are to use it to serve. Serve others, not ourselves. As we find Martha here in this story, and we talk about our evangelism, are we willing to go out and serve others? Is that part of our heart? Is that what we do? Let's go over to Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. Paul says, you, my brethren, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge the flesh. Rather, serve one another, humbly in love. Do we have a serving heart? We can honor Jesus with our homes. We can invite those in, and we can serve. We can be servants. Like Martha was a servant. I don't know about you, but I like things given to me. That's my nature. Not a good nature. Serving isn't natural to me. It's not something I'm used to doing. For Martha, this is what Martha does. She's a loving servant. Hebrews chapter 6. Go a few books over to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10, we read, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. Are we willing to go out and serve? Any comments on loving Jesus through this serving heart?
Well, I think just as people, you're much more willing to listen to somebody that's working with you or helping you or you're spending time with than somebody that's over here telling you, you gotta do this. I mean, it's just our nature. You know, we tend to put up the hand, if you will, to people that just simply want to tell us what we have to be doing. But if they're working alongside of us or helping, you know, whatever, I mean, it just changes your attitude towards whatever they have to say.
Sure. Anything else? So what else? Let's take a look at Mary. There seems to be a little bit more about Mary. In fact, if you read back in John 12, it almost seems that this story kind of revolves around Mary more than anybody, right? This is kind of revolving around Mary's action as she interacts with Jesus. She's honoring Jesus in this home. But what do we know from Mary? How is Mary going to honor Jesus? How is Mary going to love Jesus? Let's start in verse 3. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. So how did Mary love? Mary gave her best to Jesus. As you go over to Colossians 3:23, we will read about in everything that we do, how are we supposed to do it? As if we're serving who? God. Giving our best to Jesus. Mary has taken this perfume. This is really good stuff. In fact, as we go through the text, we're going to find Judas is beside himself that Mary is going to use this best of the best perfume the way that she uses it. But that doesn't matter to Mary. This perfume says this is a year's worth of wages. This is some expensive stuff. Are we willing to give our best to Jesus? These are, again, I know as we go through these classes, hopefully we're not stepping on toes and making anybody discouraged, but some of these, as we ask ourselves these questions, really make us think from time to time. Are we giving our best to Jesus in everything that we do? Yeah, I could probably go help you out, but I got some things to do. I could probably open up my home to the neighbors, but I'm kind of busy this week. Is that giving my best to Jesus? Is that offering of myself? I'm kind of a selfish person. I like to do the things that I like to do. And if that means that I might not be willing to go help you, guess what? That means I'm not giving my best to Jesus. I am not using what God has given me to honor Jesus. Not opening my home. I'm not giving of my time. We are asked to to give the best to Jesus. Mary humbles herself before Jesus. As we read this text, not only does she take this expensive perfume, the best of what she has, but we get this picture painted for us. We see Mary apparently down on her hands and knees, pouring this perfume and wiping Jesus' feet with her hair. Almost, when I first read this, almost like a degrading image. This isn't degrading. This is Mary showing her humble heart. This is Mary understanding whose feet she is in front of. Wiping his feet with her hair. You go to James chapter 4. You read verse 10. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will what? Raise you up. Do we have a humble enough heart to understand that if we are going to honor Jesus, this takes us getting on our hands and knees and understanding who we are serving, giving the best of what we have. Loving Jesus, even if she was criticized. As we read this text, as we see Mary, Mary is going to be criticized for her action. Judas says, "What are you doing? We could have taken that perfume. Do you know how much it is worth? You know what we could have done with that perfume?" And it doesn't matter to Mary what she could have done with that perfume. You know what Mary wanted to do with that perfume? She wanted to honor Jesus with it. Jesus, later in this text, tells us she was going to save it for his burial. This was meant for Jesus. But she has been moved with this dinner and this giving of herself, that she is offering the best of what she has to Jesus right now. And it doesn't matter to her what Judas says. There are times when we are evangelizing, and I'll just say it, there are people that do not understand why we do what we do. And it's hard when we start evangelizing with those people that don't understand why. They don't understand why we are willing to give of our time for somebody else. They don't understand. We can have someone for dinner. They may not understand why we sit and pray to God before we eat a meal. It doesn't make sense. Why in the world would you do that? Don't you work for your own food? No. God gives me my food. People will criticize what we do as Christians. Why in the world would you want to spend 3 times a week going to church? Why? It doesn't make sense to me. But what we see from Mary is she doesn't care the criticism that comes her way. And Jesus is going to help her out. Jesus, we see, is going to rebuke Judas. Leave her alone, Judas. Do you not understand what she's doing right now? Do you not understand how she is honoring me at this point in time? Judas doesn't get it. Judas has a hard heart. We know that. We know what Judas is going to do. Not only do we know what we do, the text tells us he's a thief. Judas has problems. But Mary loves Jesus, gives her best, humbles herself, loving Jesus even if she's criticized. Any thoughts or comments on Mary at this point? We don't read much about Lazarus, where we read Lazarus was reclining at the table with him, with the others. And I don't have anything up there with regards to Lazarus, but as I've been going through this and I think about Lazarus and what's going on, I don't think Lazarus is doing anything wrong. What's Lazarus doing?
I think he's setting an example, because if you think about it, if he raises Lazarus from the dead and then Lazarus is sitting at the dinner table with him, don't you think that that could be saying that Jesus is sitting at our dinner table with us? He's showing an example before he dies.
Okay. Lazarus is simply taking the time to be still, to be with Jesus. Do we take enough time in our lives to just be with Jesus? Just a question I had, again, as I was going through this, I just kind of popped in my mind. I veer off on some side notes from time to time. But I think about this Lazarus. I think about my own life. Do I honor Jesus? Do I honor Jesus in my own life by giving my time to just stop what I'm doing? To just sit with Jesus and know him. Just a side note, just a thought. Anything else before we move on? Verse 8. We have talked about this idea of using the opportunity many times in this class so far, these last 7 weeks. When the opportunity is put in front of us to honor Jesus, to serve Jesus, do we take it? Verse 8 says, "You will always have the poor among you." This is Jesus, again, talking to Judas. "You're always going to have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." Jesus is not saying, don't worry about the poor. Okay, I don't want us to think that's what this text is saying this morning. Jesus is not downplaying the poor. Jesus is stating a fact. There's always going to be those in need. The poor is always going to be here. Those that we can serve, those that we can help, will always be with us. But the point Jesus is making is the opportunity is now to honor me. I will not be with you. You will not always have me. Are we using the opportunity when it is put in front of us? And again, I know there's several ways that we can serve others. There are several ways that we can be a people of hospitality. But our text this morning, we're looking at in the home. Do we use the opportunity to open our homes and to honor Jesus? Do we use it? I don't know what's up with our house next door. We have a house next door to us, and we have had 4 different neighbors in about as many years. Maybe the house is haunted. I don't know. Maybe just bad luck over there. But it seems that a neighbor moves in, within a year they're gone, and we get another neighbor. And Holly and I have always talked, when that new neighbor moves in, we're going to get to know our neighbor. We're going to have him over for dinner. We're going to reach out to the neighbor, the opportunity. We're going to invite him into our home. And for whatever reason, we haven't done it. Why? Time goes by, months go by, then it's just kind of awkward, right? Can't go knock on the neighbor's door after they've been there for 6 months. "Hey, where are your neighbors? How you doing?" Gets harder as time goes. Using the opportunity now. Holly has such an inspiration. She has been beside herself for the last couple weeks. The Herbergers had a wonderful party, and we had a great opportunity to go to those new neighbors and say, "Come to this party. It's a relaxed atmosphere. Get to know some of the brothers from these different churches that are here." We had that opportunity. We did not take it. Taking those opportunities is hard, especially when it comes to opening up our homes. Why is it so hard to open up our homes? I can tell you why it's hard to open up our homes. I'm not the greatest housekeeper. I don't want someone to see what my house looks like. Anybody else have the same struggle? You don't have to raise your hand. We don't open up our homes. My wife is not the greatest cook. I'm just kidding. Yes, you are.
I said, wait a minute.
You would be surprised how long you can live on mac and cheese. I'm just kidding again. Guess who's cooking dinner tonight? But we have those things, right? Those are the struggles that we have when it comes to opening up our homes. We have those insecurities. Should they bother us? They shouldn't. Do they?
It's harder now than it used to be, though.
Okay. Why is it harder now?
Well, one of the basic things, and you know, I've been trying to figure this out for a long time because we've noticed it too. When I was a kid, we were home. Our moms were home. Moms got to know each other. You hung out laundry. You went and did this. You walked the kids, you know, to wherever. You met people. Now, you've got so many families with both working parents. You know, they're gone all day long, and they rush in at the end of the day, and they're just trying to get dinner and get the kids to the next activity and get their homework done and get on. And they don't take the time that used to be done. I mean, it's different. You have to work at it to find a time slot now to do things. And then, quite honestly, so many people are just exhausted. When they find that time slot, it's like, can we just have a quiet evening? So it's not as easy as it used to be. We spent a lot more time seeing each other in the past. I mean, I've met all but two of our neighbors. And unlike you, that one's gotten beyond the 6-month mark now. It's kind of awkward. So I guess I've missed that one, that chip sale. But you have to catch them.
Sure.
I mean, you really do.
Yeah, but we have social media. It really helps that these days. A lot of people take 5 minutes on their phones and sit down and look at what's going on with other people. You can reach out a lot easier these days than what you used to be able to.
Sure.
I know I do it every day. You know, someone clear across the country, even if it's someone 5 miles down the road, good to see you're doing good. If you need something, you know.
But I think we're better connected to those people than we are to the people whose driveway we pass every day sometimes, because we don't know their Facebook. Whatever.
Yeah, but for instance, like, a neighbor gal in Pierce the other day, she had no idea who she was, and her husband, they had death in the family, he left, her garbage disposal went out. She had just put on the town website, you know, asking if somebody was close, because it was right around Christmas, good luck getting somebody out there, and it was overwhelming response of people who now got to know this gal, and she's like, oh, thank you, you know, and it just created like a whole group of 10 people who actually started to get.
I think that's why those neighborhood websites are popping up, because people are craving that, because it hasn't been there. So.
Exactly.
We are a private people, right? We like our setting. We like our safe comfort zone. The older I get, and this is horrible, the older I get, the easier it is for me to just want to be by myself. Not really good.
You better
just
be careful. You're
stating a fact. Hey, come on, I watched Leave It to Beaver. Tell me I'm not old yet. Private people. It's hard to let people into our lives, into our circle. Again, it is easy, right? On that social media. It's easy to pull out that phone. We don't have to really so much give our time. We don't really have to serve and give a lot of effort. I'm not saying it's bad. It's a great thing that we can use the tools that we have at our disposal to reach out to people. But are we willing, again, to open up our homes, to use that opportunity? And then finally, again, we've been approaching these classes with our evangelism. Are we using our homes to evangelize? Are we willing to give of ourselves? Are we willing to open up our homes? And I want us to look at this for just a quick minute, making sure Jesus is always a guest with us. Think about that for a second. When we open up our homes, we have talked several weeks about this idea of evangelism and what we are growing into, and this reflection of God that we're trying to put out. Do we reflect the glory of God? And when we have someone in our home, or we are going to go to the home, think about our home. Is it always Jesus ready? Would Jesus feel comfortable in our home today? Or would we have to run around before Jesus got there and throw some things in some doors that we hope he doesn't open? Could Jesus just walk in and watch what we're watching on TV? Could he just walk in and see what we're reading? Could he just jump right in the conversation we're having around the dinner table? When we are evangelizing, when we are reaching out, when we are having those people into our homes. Remember back to our tracks? Everything pointing to God? Is every aspect of our home, our hearts, is it all Jesus ready? Could he just willingly open any door in our house and our hearts? Or do we have that one place? Anybody got that drawer at home? I laughed when I was putting this together thinking about that drawer. I needed a pen. I was going to take a couple notes. I couldn't find one. I opened up that specific drawer in the kitchen, the catch-all drawer that has anything and everything in it. And you open it and you just laugh at the things that are in there. Are we Jesus ready in our homes? We have been challenging ourselves as we've been going through these dinners, putting ourselves out there a little bit. We've talked about reaching out to our fellow brothers, those that might be having troubles, missing from church, reaching out. We've talked about stepping out of our comfort zone a little bit, maybe reaching out to a coworker. I'm challenging us this week, as hard as it seems. Let's open up our homes. Find somebody to open up your home to. Debbie talked about we just don't do it anymore. And I look at my life and I think about the places that had the most impact on my life, and it was going to people's homes. It was those friends I had in school that we spent time at their house. It was Grandma and Grandpa's house, that we spent time in their homes. We can be a giant influence on the world around us if we're willing to open up our hearts and open up our homes. Any other comments this morning? We're out of time this morning. I will not be here next week. I'm not sure yet who's going to cover. We will find somebody. But we'll be back in 2 weeks, and then we'll have 2 weeks of this class left. So I look forward to that. We'll be starting a new topic. I thank you for your time, and Lord willing, we'll see you in 2 weeks.